George, Claire Murphy, the RTÉ Primetime programme. George, I'd just like to ask you if you have any intention of coming back to Ireland to face the outstanding allegations of child sexual abuse against you, George. How do you respond to people who describe you as Ireland's most notorious paedophile?
Frances Chalky White was born to swim. Under respected coach George Gibney, he was winning national swimming titles in his early teens and later swam for Ireland. In the 1980s, he became a successful coach himself, but when he noticed a disturbing pattern of behaviour by his now colleague George Gibney, Chalky White had a choice to make.
You would see the swimmer that he was most interested in. I can kind of remember one person, him talking about this girl, and she was probably only around 9 years old. It was in one of the junior competitions, and he passed a comment at the competition, "This girl is going to be great." And I remember thinking, oh, I kind of heard that before, you know. So over time then I began to see that actually, this person was the topic of conversation for him, you know. It was always how great the girl was improving and she was really developing, and how she was going to be one of the best that we'd ever seen, right? And over then time, you started to see, actually, not only is he talking about her, but then you began to see her in his company more often. And when you were finishing up a competition and going away, that person was actually sitting in the car with him. So, you know, then you heard different things, like either collecting them from school or, you know, so you saw them become a bigger part of his life. So I saw it happen to a number of people, but I felt there was nothing I could do about it. You know, you see these things happening, but you don't have hard facts, right? So you don't really have the ammunition, and you don't have the other person to come along and back you up. Here was a guy who was probably the most powerful person in swimming, who was going from strength to strength, becoming more powerful and had access to more kids. So I was even more angry that this guy is doing it still, but powerless.
For Chalky White, Gibney's behaviour had a special resonance. It was an unwelcome reminder of the abuse that he suffered himself at the hands of George Gibney between the ages of 11 and 14.
Mostly happened in his house on Greenville Terrace, just off the South Circular Road. He lived there with his older brother. His mother and father had died just a couple of years beforehand. I used to come over to the house, do a weight session in the house. He had some weights there. There was sort of a sitting room, which is where we actually did the weight session. He had one of those pull-out sofas that goes down into a bed. Of course, that was used initially as the bench for doing some of the weight workouts, facing out onto the street. Long, traditional type windows, as they are for cottages. But always, of course, the curtains were always closed, so it was always quite dark. But very old, very dark, and not well decorated, but just had the essentials, I suppose, what you would expect two guys to be living in on their own.
The years passed, and by the end of the 1980s, 35-year-old Chalky White was one of the top coaches in the country. Although they hadn't previously got along, Gibney, who is now Ireland's national swimming coach, began to favour White with appointments to train the national squad. When White had a life-threatening accident, Gibney was on hand to help. He seemed a changed man, and White wondered if he had been overly harsh on him. So he decided to give Gibney a second chance.
A year or so went by and I found mistake. After a year of kind of working along with him, I began to see the deceitfulness that there was in him, and things that he did and said with me, I would find, and I'd find out for myself that he wasn't being truthful. And I began to think, you're 35 years old. What possessed you to ever believe him in any way at all? The guy hasn't changed. So forget that he is not doing something to these kids. You know, he is exactly the same as he was many years ago. And that it was really the turning point where I just felt, I've got to do something for myself about it, because, you know, he was actually hurting me again. Forget about what he was doing to the other people. I began to find that he was deceitful to me, And that's what caused me to be thinking, what sort of a fool are you, etc., etc. And, you know, it really got in on me. And on the one hand, he would be very nice to me. And then on the other hand, I'd find out he was complete opposite. So it was just getting worse and worse and worse. And something that you had held the lid on for 20 or 30 years suddenly was starting to, the lid was starting to come off. And I then went about trying to do something about it. And of course, that started into the blackest period of my life.
Working so closely with his former abuser had proved too much for Chalky White. Long suppressed rage began to manifest itself, most dramatically at a meeting of the Swimming Association, when White discovered that Gibney had deliberately excluded him from an earlier meeting.
I kind of lost it, you know, I just really lost it. I went out of control, and I said many things that probably I felt afterwards I shouldn't have said. And then after the meeting, I asked him to the house to confront him, to tell him, listen, I know what you're all about, right? And even tried to sort something out for myself, that maybe by confronting him, I might actually deal with it a lot better myself, because it had been an unspoken set of events in all of the years from 14 to 35, right? Never talked once about it, never, no hints, no nothing, right? Because I, over the years, it could destroy me if I say something. I have nothing to back me up. But the point came where I really didn't care. I needed to do something about this. I felt that one way was to actually talk to him about it and let him know that I didn't forget about it, and that, you know, it was something that he better be aware of. If he's doing it to anybody else, then you better be on your guard. So I gave him a call and I asked him, would he come over? I said we needed to talk about things that we had been planning as far as swimming goes, development, etc. But there was something I really wanted to talk to him about, and that was what had happened at the meeting. He came over in the afternoon. It was a summerish type of day, and it was very bright. House of Living in Killiney was, you know, it was a nice, bright front room that we went into. But he sat down on a chair in front of the window that looks out onto the front garden, and he looked like he was completely in control, and almost to the point of being smug, because he had known that he had really got to me at the meeting, but it didn't seem to bother him in any way at all, which really aggravated me, because it was like, you don't realise what's going on in my head. You don't realise what you're doing, or maybe you do and you're actually enjoying it. So he came over to the house and confidently came in to talk about what had actually happened. I can still see him sitting in the chair looking at me with almost, not necessarily a smirk, but it's, like I say, a casualness. And I said, I just want to talk to you about the meeting. And I said, do you realise what's happening? And he said, no, not really. And I said, well, you know, all the things that you did years ago are starting to come back to me. And I lost control of that meeting. And really, I could have said anything. And I'm afraid of what I can say. I said, do you understand? And he said, no, not really. I said, well, maybe the next time at a meeting, if I lose the head, I might say something that either could land you in jail or land me in jail. I said, do you know what I mean? He said, no. And that really even bothered me more. I was already had lots of problems in my head, but here was a guy that was basically saying to me, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. I actually don't remember what went down in the past. And I said, well, you know, it all goes down to like what happened when I was a kid. Do you know what I'm talking about now? And he continued to say no, third time. I said, OK, that's it, right? Well, when you had sex with me when I was a kid, I said, that is all starting to come back and cause me lots of problems now. And the next time I lose the head, I don't know what I'll say, right? And I don't have anything to back it up, so I'm afraid that I could end up in jail. So I got to do something about it. Do you know what I mean now? And he said, yeah, I do know. So I'll stop being a national coach. I'll resign as a national coach and I'll just concentrate on my club. I was like, well, that's probably about the worst thing you can do, because that means you're more in contact. It's like, nothing seems to faze this guy. But he got up and left, and that was it. You know, I'm going to resign as national coach. So his demeanour was always like, almost like, so what, you know? Like, you'll never beat me. Like a confidence that was just unwarranted that I felt at the time. I see it as clearly now, and it still has as much of an impact on me as far as his reaction goes at that particular time. And it kind of, it was what really kicked me off on the being really psychologically unbalanced is what I was from then on. I just couldn't handle it, didn't know how to deal with it, was confused, was up one minute, was down the next, knew how to deal with it, didn't know how to deal with it, felt I could talk to somebody, then felt I couldn't talk to. People had told me to keep it to myself, couldn't really get anybody to back me up, so I felt like I'm going to die with this, and that was about the worst thing that I could feel, like nobody would ever believe me.
Chalky White had previously told only one person in the swimming world about Gibney's abuse. That was the senior coach, Derry O'Rourke, who advised him to forget all about it. But after confronting Gibney in late 1990, he was no longer able to keep it to himself, and this became very clear on a flight to the World Championships in Australia with Ireland's top swimmer and Gibney's protégé, 22-year-old Gary O'Toole.
We flew out on St. Stephen's Day from Dublin, and Gary was sitting by the window. There were three seats, and two seats beside him were vacant, and he was sitting reading or maybe even playing chess or something like that. He was on his own there, and I came up and sat beside him, just started talking to him. Actually, he was sitting up on the seat with both feet, you know, so it was really casual, and I always kind of go on well with Gary. I always found him a nice guy, you know, and just chatting away about just things in general. But in my mind, there was something there that I just wanted to find out a little bit more, because Gary was, I felt, in the same kind of position as I was in, right? So as we talked on in general about, you know, how workouts were going and how he felt he was going to do at the World Championships themselves, you know. And then just for some reason out of my head, which I hadn't planned, I just went, you know, had George ever did anything to him, or what exactly was his relationship? How close was it? And, you know, Gary's a really smart guy, right? And he, on a personal basis, interpersonal-wise, is also really very good, very nice. He knew there was something I was trying to get at, but he didn't know exactly what it was. And I think probably as I talked a little bit more and told him a little bit more about what was going on, I think maybe he, in the back of his mind, started to think of things that had happened to him, approaches that George would have made to him that he rejected. But things began to maybe fall into place. And I found that actually he was one of the people who, himself and a girl called Carol Walsh, another coach, were two of the few people who believed me at all. And the way Gary reacted at that particular time and the week subsequent to that was probably what helped me survive, right? Because if he had been negative towards me, I don't know how I would have dealt with it, because I would have had no lifeline at all, you know. But he spent a lot of time over the coming weeks, and sometimes I regret it because maybe I feel like I might have impacted his performance. It wasn't what I set out to do. I'm quite clear about what motivating is, etc. I was a coach. So afterwards I began to think, oh my God, that maybe that wasn't the right thing to do. However, he dealt with it the way he dealt with it over the period afterwards. He was very understanding. He really was very, very helpful. In indirect ways, he was very encouraging to me. You know, he said, my focus is going to be on the Olympics. There's no question about that. But I guarantee you, Chalky, that when I'm finished the Olympics, I'll be following up on this, that's for sure. Right? And I think an awful lot of that was because what I kind of told him, I think maybe he saw in other people as well. Maybe he saw something that had happened to him, and while nothing advanced, he saw the signs, and I think it gave him reason to believe, well, I wasn't making things up.
It was an uncomfortably long stay in Australia for three members of Team Ireland: Chalky White, Gary O'Toole and George Gibney. And when they returned home, Gary O'Toole stunned the Irish swimming world by leaving his coach, George Gibney.
O'Toole, seen here in action at the European Championships in 1988, has changed clubs and in future will be trained by former international Chalky White, Neither Gibney or Chalky White had any comment to make on the situation this evening.
We were in Australia for approximately a month. George left a little bit before the end and came back. I think in trying to deal with it, is like attack is the best form of defence. So I think when he came back, he just started to say, Chalky's really gone off the wall since he had his accident. He's crazy and, you know, you want to hear some of the things that he's talking about. So when I came back, it was a couple of days later before I went to the spring swimming championships, which I think were held in Athlone. Now, Athlone is a small 25-metre pool, quite a nice pool, quite bright and quite airy, felt quite spacious and quite comfortable. But it was actually quite striking. I walked in and I felt, first of all, the place was really packed with people. I mean, it was really full. And I remember thinking, this is a bit intimidating. And it was, so many people made it look actually quite dark. And nobody, absolutely nobody said hello to me. And I was really hit by it. You know, I just was so surprised, you know. And some of my closest friends in swimming at the time even didn't say hello, you know. And I mean, I walked by many, many people and really nobody said, including my own friends, nobody said hello. So the atmosphere in the pool, the number of people, the darkness of it made a real kind of sinister feeling for me. And I was like, I felt unwelcome. And I began then to hear Chalky's gone crazy. Ever since his accident, he's been unstable. And walking into a dark, heavily populated pool, with this unwelcome feeling and knowing that these things were going around, it was like, this is not a good feeling at all. And I don't look forward to what's going to be happening in the future. That was, and I knew that that was the way it was going to be.
Within weeks, George Gibney had resigned as Ireland's national coach and the Swimming Association replaced him with Derry O'Rourke. But Gibney continued to coach children and remained a powerful figure in Irish swimming.
I think what was really the motivation with a lot of people was, here was somebody who was taking their kids, either directly because they were in the club with him or indirectly because they were, he was helping them develop their province or helping them develop the national team. But this guy was certainly taking swimming to a new level and he was everybody's ticket to success. He was a pillar of the society, the typical thing, you know, people had the highest respect for him, you know, in a way like the priest. There's no way that he could be doing these things. So anybody who would be doing or saying anything like this could not be telling the truth. Add to that the fact that I was a coach, which a lot of people would have seen in competition with him. I had a very strong swimming club, one of the strongest teams in the country. So I would have seen as being in competition for many people would have just thought, oh, all Chalky wants to do is be national coach. So the only way he can be national coach is get rid of George Gibney. How's he going to get rid of George Gibney? Well, then he's going to make up things like this. And then with people saying, you know, with George and people saying, well, he's crazy, it kind of added to the fact that, well, he's the bad guy, not George. Many, many parents of kids that were in the club that he was involved with, people who were very, very friendly beforehand, suddenly never said a word after that. One family and the parents came to me some years later and said, we're really sorry, you know. Their own kids were involved and were very good. And they maybe felt at the time that they didn't believe me. But some years later came back to me and said, look, I'm really sorry, you know, and I hope you're okay and I hope things get better for you, right? And that really meant an awful lot that they came along to that. Others didn't bother to do that. And yeah, it bothered me.
Support for Chalky White was in very short supply. Among the many who chose to ignore his allegations was Swimming Association Vice President Frank McCann. Behind the scenes, Gary O'Toole was quietly speaking to former swimmers of George Gibney and gathering allegations with which to confront the association after the approaching Olympics.
I just couldn't handle what was going on and decided that I would go see a psychologist, right, that used to work with the Olympic team from years ago, so that I knew. So I went to see this guy. I felt that I was either going to kill myself or I was going to do something that was going to, like I say, land me in jail. So I went for help. How am I going to actually deal with this? Not telling him what my underlying problem was. I went to see him 3 or 4 times and kind of always talked around the issue. But after the 4th time, he said to me, look, can I just tell you what I think here? And he said, I said, yeah, OK. And he said, well, I think, yeah, when you were younger, you had sex with this guy, and I think it's causing you problems. And he basically told me everything, some things that I hadn't even told him about. I was like, where did you get that all from, you know? So it was on the run-up to the 1992 Olympics. It was about 4 or 5 months beforehand. I'm not able to deal with it right now. I'll come back to him after the Olympics. I went back after the Olympics in October 1992 and I said, okay, I'm back. And he said to me, Talky, I've got something to tell you, you know. Legally, I was bound to go and do something about it. I'm sorry, you know, but I had to report it to the police. And he said, well, he said, it's completely up to you. You know, I reported it to the police. I can tell you that the police have investigated. They've taken statements from 62 people. I don't know how many people were actually involved, but there are many more people. So it's completely up to you. They will continue the investigation. But if you want to actually go and talk to the police, then here's the contact. But they'll be following it anyway. I was shocked. And if there was one kind of striking moment, it was at the time when I felt most hurt, because I never had anybody tell me that it happened to them. And this was like, yes, it had happened to them. The hurt was I wasn't the only one. You know, it was like I wanted to have a monopoly on the hurt in this. And then I found out actually that it had happened to more to other people. That made me quite angry. You know, and even confused, because like, why should I be feeling like this? Here I had now somebody to back up my story. But in fact, it was a kind of a strike moment. Suddenly I realized I wasn't the only one. And I found that really, really hard to deal with. And then I found out a good friend that I swam with, a girl, was another one. And then I began to really, that was when it was like, this guy is just unbelievable. This guy is actually evil.
Events unfolded quickly, and Gibney left the country just before Gardaí sent a file to the DPP containing 17 charges of rape. He returned briefly to bring a judicial review, which successfully prevented the case's proceeding on the basis that too much time had passed for him to receive a fair trial. But to the general public, none of this was known until December 1994.
Mr. Gibney has denied the allegations of sexual abuse which were made against him in yesterday's Sunday Tribune and repeated by most newspapers today. Sworn affidavits had been given detailing the alleged incidents.
George took off and different people told me about him in different places. And in a way, it was somewhat of an obsession. There were people who actually told me he was back in the country and he was living in an apartment in Glenageary or wherever. And, you know, I did stupid things, like, because we were trying to trace him down. I actually sat outside, watched, you know, and when I think back, I mean, what was I doing, you know? But there were people who seemed to want to almost have us chase him all over the place, right? So he was in England, moved around, and then next thing we heard, he was actually coaching in Scotland. And then I got a phone call from somebody who said, you know, could I explain to them what I thought was his way of operating? And I said, well, you know, here's the way I think it usually goes, and here's the way I've seen it goes. And the person at the other end went, oh my God. I said, well, why do you react like that? Because he went away on a trip and he was organising for certain kids to be in rooms on their own, and he was those kids he was collecting from school. I said, that's exactly it. So I think they then saw he's just starting off again. And my feeling was, I'm not surprised, you know, because I think this is his character, this is the way he works, and it'll never change. and he's skilled and developed the skills over the years. Now he can actually do it without being detected. And OK, you'll run him out, but I guarantee, I know, I'll hear from him somewhere else in the world, right? And he'll continue to ply his trade.
2 years after Gibney was replaced by Derry O'Rourke as national coach, it emerged that O'Rourke too had been abusing children for decades. Shortly after that, the other senior swimming figure that Chalky had approached, Frank McCann, was found guilty of murdering his own wife and foster child to conceal the fact that he had fathered a child with a teenage swimmer.
I suppose, try not to think of it too much now, you know. I got out of swimming, I left, I went and worked abroad, and kind of felt like I got out of the cycle. I stopped meeting people who constantly reminded me. I stopped seeing cars and people who either looked like him or had the same characteristics, or, you know, so I felt like I got away from that and I was working somewhere else where I just didn't have to think about it. And as a matter of fact, most of the time I forgot about it. But there are times when I regret doing it, because it had such a big impact on everybody around me and myself. And while, yes, it may have stopped him doing this to other people, it may have reduced the numbers, at least there are some kids walking around that could have been impacted like it did impact me. Yeah, I could look and say, well, at least I did that. But in my own head, there is a big part of me that says, I just wish I'd never done this. So I'd have mixed feelings now, in a way, some good, but also some bad.
Derry O'Rourke served 9 years in prison and was released in 2007. Frank McCann is serving two life sentences for double murder. George Gibney lives in the United States under an assumed name and has never been convicted of any sexual offence. Today, Chalky White works internationally as a business consultant in the area of IT.